Money Sense is brought to you by the Ellenbecker Investment Group, three-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau's Torch Award for Business Ethics and Integrity. The Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com. Listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 p.m. and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. We are located in Pewaukee, just east of Highway 164 and Capitol Drive. We're in the Town Bank Building and also in the Village of Whitefish Bay and the Equitable Bank Building, just across the street from Winkies. Everyone knows where Winkies are. We are now also available to service our clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. And if you'd like to know more, you can go to ellenbecker.com for more details. My guest today is Richard Schiller, and he is with Pavlik Investment Advisors. He is a wealth advisor and portfolio manager. And of course, Terry Pavlik has been on the show, I think now for probably about 15 or 20 years, talking about the markets, talking about bonds, interest rates. He's an integral part of our business because their firm manages our bond portfolios. And so I always like to get them on because bonds are kind of one of those difficult animals to understand. We also think that they're the very, very safe, but actually they have more volatility than most investments altogether. So today we're going to talk about a little bit, of course, about Pavlik. We're going to talk about the market. I'm hoping that Richard bought his crystal ball to tell us what we can expect in 2022 so that we all can be a leg up. So welcome to the show, Richard.
Thanks so much for having me, Karen.
You know, just recently we did our 25th anniversary celebration and due diligence meeting in Florida, and you and Terry Pavlik came to speak to our group just to really inform us as we're investing and managing our clients' portfolio, you know, how to really deeply and deeper understanding about the bond market. And so I'd really like to talk about that today because I think people sort of get stuck in thinking about bonds when they hear about the interest rates, mortgage rates, but they don't really know how to identify it as part of their portfolio. So if you could start just by telling us a little bit about Pavlik and then helping us to really understand what's been going on in our country and how it's affecting the interest rates and how people can really look at their portfolios over time.
Sure. Yeah, happy to. That's a great lead in. So here at Pavlik, we manage bond and stock portfolios for clients, and we sub-advise the bond portfolios of Ellenbecker Investment Group. And it's really an exciting place to be because, like you said, it's not as liquid as the stock market. We can't go out and see bonds trading every single second and have an live active price. So it really does take a little bit of extra effort to really have a manager be looking at what is available and what is out there. So I think when you take a look back at 2021, and I always like holding macroeconomists, I like holding them accountable to their guides. And, you know, many people have said we're in a rising rate environment. And is that correct? Yeah, I think we are. But I always start and end with a 10-year U.S. Treasury that is kind of the base. This is not, it doesn't include a corporate default spread. But if you were to loan money to the U.S. government for 10 years, what interest rate would you make per year? And we started the year just under 1%. And currently we're trading at about 1.45%. So that rate has gone up 45 basis points, 0.45%. And I go back to the beginning of the theme, rising rate environment. And I just kind of chuckle a little bit because yes, we are in a rising rate environment, but how far have we really come? Well, you know, we've come less than 0.5%. That really isn't all too far from a rising interest rate environment. So what does that mean? Bond prices have generally stayed pretty high when rates stay low. And yields, when we're getting our maturities back, that bonds that matured over the course of 2021, we're able to redeploy that capital out into 2031 as part of our strategy. And we did pick up you know, another 50 to 75 basis points, or 0.50 or 0.75% of spread. So we take bonds that mature this year, put them back out 10 years from now. And generally what we're seeing is, you know, we want to get paid for buying corporate bonds. So something, a higher rate than that US 10-year treasury rate. And we've been able to find some 3%, you know, lower than 3.5, but greater than 3% fixed rate bonds to put at the tail end of that maturity ladder. So our strategy is to buy that, to hold it until maturity. We generally try to avoid, if there's any call protection, we try to avoid calls so we don't get the bonds back. We would like to lock in that 3% and take that 3% a year until the bonds mature. You know, the other side of this whole spectrum is where the stock market plays out. And that's really been up and to the right this whole year. I think many macroeconomists were probably vouching for some volatility this year after the year we had in the prior year. And we didn't really have much volatility at all in the stock market. It was pretty much up and to the right. The largest drawdown we had, we probably just experienced it. It was about 5%. And today, after, you know, we get reports that the symptoms of this new variant are relatively sanguine, we, you know, rallied another 1.5%. So here we are sitting 3% from all-time highs in the stock market. Stocks have rallied up and to the right. Yields that I think have remained relatively low. I don't know if you would call this a rising rate environment. You know, that's kind of where we stand, how the year went. It was a good year. There's very little risk of any default. So spreads remained narrow, you know, I put it maybe 1% above the US corporate or US treasury rate. So all in a good year, and you know, we're looking forward to, I think that rising rate environment will continue in the future. I don't think it's gonna be though, just, you know, off to 3 or 4% on the US 10-year treasury rate. I think there's still, for a number of factors, gonna be pressure to keep bond yields lower.
And when we get back, let's help people understand when they see the interest rates as being so low for mortgage rates. And I can remember my parents when the interest rates were 12% and they had all their money in CDs because they could live off of the interest. And of course, now it's a whole new ballgame. My guest today is Richard Schiller. He is with Pavlik Investment Advisors. He is a wealth advisor and portfolio manager. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. My guest today is Richard Schiller. He is with Pavlik Investment Advisors. He is a wealth advisor and portfolio manager. And both Richard and Terry do the bond portfolios for our clients. And one of the reasons that, well, I've known Terry for probably almost 20 some years, and he's become a really good friend. And that's one of the beauties of our business, is we actually know the people who are managing our clients' money, and they understand what's important to us and how we put our portfolios together. And when we talk about bond portfolios and we talk about the safety portion of a client's portfolio, one of the things we do, as you know, Richard, is we structure at least 7 years of bonds and ladders for our clients, so that we know that regardless of what happens in the marketplace, we have at least 7 years of income set aside for our clients. And basically what happens is each year a certain portion of money comes due. If we've had a really great stretch like we've had now, we spend out of the capital gains of the growth of the portfolio. But when, and we know there will be a point, and I'm thinking, Richard, you're going to tell us when the market is going to correct. And then we spend from the bond portfolio. So the other day, a client of mine said, well, Karen, what's going to happen if the market goes down? It's going to go down. And I said, well, you tell me what's going to happen. And she looked and she said, nothing. And I said, well, what won't happen is your lifestyle won't have to change, the amount that you're spending, because we figure out what people are spending, and that's what comes due every year. And so that protects them. And we've never seen a market that's been down 7 years, of course. So, Richard, when we talk about people, everyone is talking about what's going to happen with inflation, what's going to happen with the interest rates. People are struggling at these low, low interest rates, of course. But there are a lot of people like me. I just refinanced and got a wonderful rate. So can you give an idea to our listeners as to how to interpret what's going on with the bond market and the interest rates and how they reflect each other?
Yes, certainly. So you're right. On the debt side of your personal balance sheet, yes, you can go out and get a 30-year mortgage for close to 3%, if not under it. I think if it's a jumbo rate, you're at 3%. And if you're non-jumbo conforming loan, you're probably closer to 2.75%. And that's the interest rate that you're paying to borrow money for a mortgage for your home. On top of that, that mortgage interest is tax deductible. So if you're itemizing on your taxes, you know, that 3% or 2.75%, it really gets below 2.5% on an after-tax basis, which is incredibly low. So that's really good for taking out debt. You know, you mentioned you refinanced myself. We have a loan on our home. We recently are actually going through the building process after unable to really secure, getting in too many bidding wars, which has its own, that could be a whole nother podcast. But for this, I would say that we thought like, look, I think in our bond portfolio, like we said, we're taking those near-term maturities and buying out at 3%. That's really kind of a break even from when you're comparing that to your mortgage rate, if not beating it a little bit. You know, on an after-tax basis, you're probably close to 2.5% on your mortgage. And on an after-tax basis, in that next purchase of buying your bond with a 2031 maturity, that next rung of the ladder 10 years out, you're probably in about the same boat. So you're really close to break even. So my thought is, let's get as much debt as you can get. And, you know, with our personal situation, you know, we're a young family, so we do have a higher allocation to stocks with a much longer time horizon. And I believe over the long term that stocks will outperform that 3%. Now the question becomes, well, what if, you know, you have someone in their 60s or 70s or 80s, should they be going out and getting a 30-year fixed mortgage? And, you know, my answer is probably no. It's not a terrible place if interest rates rise and you've locked in debt at low levels. But at the same time, when you're towards the tail end of your earnings career, really your human capital has depleted. Most people usually don't want to be working till their 80s or 90s. So you have to take a more conservative stance. And that's really where bonds come into the portfolio. And, you know, at 3%, you know, I know inflation, there's a ton of talk about inflation. We've had 30-year highs in the recent numbers. You know, they've touched over 6%, which is really, really scary for someone living on a fixed income. And, you know, my response is always like, well, what's the alternative? We can go to stocks, but by the way, stocks do have, you know, on average every year, we're going to have a 5 to 10% pullback. You know, that's definitely not beating inflation, right? So 6% plus is inflation. If you have a 10% pullback, well, that's a 15% spread, right? So there is greater volatility with stocks and bonds. Because of our strategy, we really don't take market risk. We accept it. We say, okay, all those bonds that are coming due in this year, we're going to get that capital back and we're going to go out and redeploy it. And that's, you know, we look at interest rates all the time and we always try to guess where they're going to be. And I have tried for forever, and Terry Pavlik has tried for forever. And we both are like, let's just accept the market risk. Let's take 20% of a client's portfolio and say, we're going to earn 3% in this portfolio. Every year, 10% of that portfolio will come back, and it forces us to then rebalance. And we say, well, if stocks drop 10 or 20%, it almost forces you to do the right thing from a behavioral standpoint, because we can take those funds and we can say, let's rebalance. Stocks came down. Let's buy more stocks. Or the opposite can also be true. And also from a behavioral personality standpoint, someone might be feeling like stocks are really, really lofty, or their personal circumstances might change. They may have kids going to college and near-term college funding bills or maybe health medical bills to fund. And we say stocks have had a heck of a run. Let's get more conservative. Let's sell some stocks and buy some bonds and lock in these yields. And the third alternative, you have cash bonds. The third alternative is cash, right? You can sit in cash. And this one just doesn't make sense to me, because why don't you go out and even buy a one-year bond, but do something, and maybe you'll get 1%. You're not going to beat out inflation, but at least you're going to do something better. If you have a large cash sum sitting in a checking account somewhere, you're probably not making much more than 0.01%. At least that's what I make on my Chase checking account. So, it's good to have, obviously, an emergency fund. Definitely recommend a couple months at the very least of cash on hand. But beyond that, look to bonds, look to stocks if your risk tolerance allows it to go further out on the risk spectrum.
Richard, when I talk to clients, a couple things that I talk about as they are looking at retirement or in retirement is that no longer do they have a savings account, but now they have a spending account. And they kind of look at me like, really? And that's the whole purpose of saving your whole life and then having a portfolio that you can live off of. Then you really don't have to save. The idea is to be able to spend and enjoy the money that you have. And there are so many theories out there. I've had people say to me, well, I read something that says, whatever my age is, that's how much I should have in bonds. And so if they're 80 years old, they'd have 80% of their portfolio in bonds. But that isn't really a true way of looking at it, because depending on how large that portfolio is, if they have 80% of their money in bonds and they have $1 million portfolio and they're not spending from it, they're losing the opportunity for growth. And so many years ago, my daughter Julie and I, we actually worked with Terry, we worked with several different people looking at a way that we could protect our clients, but yet still not miss the opportunity for growth. And right. That's why we came up with, we figure out exactly how much money do you need to take from your portfolio? How much money is that to live? What does that look like in addition to Social Security or pensions or child support or whatever it might be that you have coming in? People have rental incomes, but how much do you actually need to take from your portfolio? And we multiply that times 5 years. And then we add 2 additional years for unexpected expenses or other things that you might want to do. And we break that up. And every year, that's the amount that comes due. And then the rest of the, because that's what you're going to spend, the rest of the money then can be invested conservatively, but also for growth, such as dividend paying stocks and other types of investments that diversify the portfolio. And that's the part that you and Terry do for us. You help us to develop those. We really think of it as the safe money. It's the money that is going to be there dependably, regardless of what happens to the market. But I think people often get confused with the difference between a mutual fund that holds bonds and individual bonds that they own. And very often a client will say, well, our bond portfolio is worth less because the bonds are depreciated. But we always talk to them and say, you don't have to worry about that because we're holding them until they mature. Could you talk about the differences between a mutual fund and owning individual bonds? And Taylor's giving me the little high sign that we're almost done. So rather than have to cut you off in the middle, let's take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about those two different ways of owning bonds and how they relate to the market differently. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. If you would like to know more about EIG, and if you are interested in making an appointment and coming in to talk with us, You can go to ellenbecker.com for more details, or you can call us at 262-691-3200. My guest today is Richard Schiller, and he is a wealth advisor and portfolio manager for Pavlik Investment Advisors. And they are right here in, Delafield. And we get to see them all the time. They are wonderful talking to our clients and also educating us as advisors so that we can inform our clients as to how their portfolios are working, why they're working that way. And I think the biggest thing is what you can expect, because what I find when the market goes down is that most people don't really understand what's going to happen when the market goes down. And we're all excited when the market goes up, but then when the market goes down, what does it mean to their portfolios? So Richard, if you can explain again the difference between a mutual fund bond portfolio and owning your own individual bond portfolio and how they operate and what makes them so unique and different and why we actually need both.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Karen. There are pros and cons to each. If you can set aside a portion of your portfolio and really know that, hey, this 20%, let's say I want to allocate to bonds, this is not going to be touched. I'm not going to buy and sell this. I'm not going to touch this for said many of years. You can really match your liabilities with the maturity years of your bond portfolio. So what that means is that if, let's say, I know at least for 5 years, you know, let's just put a number out there, I can go out and buy a bond matured that's maturing in 2026. To buy that bond and mature in 2026, I know the interest rate that I'm going to have over the 5 years. I know the price that I'm paying for the bond today. And then I also know that at maturity, at 2026, when that bond comes due, that I'm getting $100 back. So sometimes that bond's going to trade today at 105. Sometimes that bond today is going to trade at 95. And if it's 95, I'm going to make a buck a year, but my coupon interest might be 2%. If I buy that bond that's trading at 105, I know I'm going to lose 5% over the course of 5 years, right? So I'm going to lose 1% a year, but my coupon interest instead of 2% is probably 4%. So it's kind of either way you get there, you're going to be, the market will keep the rate at that maturity or at about the same 3%. But when you take, take that scenario, when you buy that bond, you are not paying expense ratios for holding that bond over the course of those 5 years. So there are a number of bond funds out there, some with varying expense ratios, but I've seen some as high and crazy. I think anything over 1% per year for a bond fund is rather crazy. With yields this low, you just can't make money if you have a 1% expense ratio bond mutual fund on top of the expense fee that you're paying to your advisor. So, what if you just have an advisor that is talented enough to be able to go out into the direct corporate bond market and just buy the bonds directly? We're essentially skipping the middleman and therefore wiping out the need for those fees, for the expense ratio fees that mutual funds carry. Now, what's the downside of what we're doing by buying these direct bonds? The downside is there's not a lot of liquidity. So if you are buying and selling bonds, I would put a rough placeholder in there of about 1% of transaction costs to be buying and selling bonds. And by the way, the mutual fund fees pay these same fees too. They're just backwardsly put into the net asset value of the mutual fund fee. But if someone were to say in that prior situation, we have 5 years, and over the course of those 5 years, we buy, we sell, we buy, we sell, and we buy and we sell. Well, the 3% per year that we're going to make, because we had so much churn in the portfolio, buying and selling, the transaction costs are much higher, because every time we're buying and selling, we're taking a 1% spread transaction, right? So if I might buy something for 105 today, I can sell it for 104 tomorrow. So I don't want to be buying and selling. That's why we hold bonds until maturity to really minimize the expenses. At the end of the day, this business is really about maximizing return and minimizing expenses, and that includes advisor fees. So on the mutual fund side, the positive there though is you do have liquidity where if you want and you say, hey, I might need this money in a year, you can liquidate that in a year, right? So and there are no transaction costs to do that, to sell that mutual fund. To your earlier point about, you know, just in general prices being down in the bond portfolio, that also means prices go down in mutual funds too, right? So I just pulled up the ticker, the BND. This is just the Vanguard Total Bond Market ETF. We started the year at 87 and bonds are at 85. So, you know, bond mutual funds, bond ETFs, their underlining investments are the direct bonds that are our underlining investments too. We think ours are of higher quality and higher yield. Sometimes in some mutual funds, you might have high yield mutual funds that have different strategies than us, or sometimes some mutual funds will have like a 30-year bond, for instance, so different strategies. But there's no special sauce where the underlining asset value only goes up and to the right, which is why our goal is just to say, hey, if I buy this today, I'm going to lock in the price. I know I'm going to get 100. I'm going to hold to maturity. I'm locking in that yield. And every year, I'm going to get more money back. And I'm going to say, should this money go to stocks or should this money go back into bonds? And let's maximize that yield again.
People often get confused about certificates of deposit at the bank. People will say, well, why should I really put money into a mutual fund bond fund, or why should I buy individual bonds? I can get a CD and I don't have to pay anything. And the reality is there's money to be made on every single investment. You just have to understand where. And basically what the bank does is they reduce the yield in order to be compensated themselves. So there's always going to be some fee associated with a transaction. And right now, the bonds that you're buying for us, because you can go out and buy these bonds I guess the way I look at it is we take all of our clients that have money that we want to get invested in a bond ladder, and we basically call you and say, we have X amount of millions of dollars that we have to invest. And you invest, and then you break the bonds up and put them into our clients' accounts. And very often, because we're only buying a million or 2 million or whatever it is, that's too small a piece for some of the bigger firms to buy. So you can pick up these absolutely, I call them delicious bonds that we can own in our clients' portfolios that have higher yields than they may be able to get anywhere else. And you also buy bonds that have some unique properties to them.
Yes, you're exactly right, Karen. Actually, how we really go through is actually account by account. And we see, we first start with what are our highest cash position bond accounts. And what will come up is if any bond had matured or if there was any bond that was called recently. And we go through and look at every single bond once every couple of days, every single account once every couple of days to make sure if any bonds were called or if any bonds matured, we don't want that client sitting in cash because they've hired us to earn bond returns. So we want to get that capital back out there. So step one for us is to take all of our accounts under management with Ellen Becker and see who has too high of cash positions. And we look at that account. I wish it was as easy sometimes as buying $2 million of bonds and just allocating them across accounts. But remember, let's say one account has a 2025 bond that was called. What really needs to be done is we need to go into that account and see where in the maturity ladder is there a rung of the ladder that's missing? Where do you have to hop, you know, two rungs to get up? Where does it go from, let's say, 24 to 26? Then you're like, okay, now I see. So there's a 2025 bond hole that we're missing. So let's plug that hole. And you're exactly right. We're buying bonds sometimes in small quantities of sometimes 5 or 10 bonds at a time, just to plug that one hole. So just to put maybe numbers to it, if it's a $100,000 account, for instance, and the 2025 bond was called, if $10,000 roughly came back to us, if it was called at 100 plus interest. And then we're going to look to replace that just 10,000. So very small relative amount, but that's that very close attention to detail that, you know, no computer program can really run to say we need to buy, you know, 10 bonds here. And then it's okay, what's the best in the market that's out there right now to fill that hole? So it is a laborious process. And we also have to take into consideration too, just industry diversification. You know, I think out in 2029, 2030 maturity years, there are a number of bonds in the oil and gas industry that are investment grade and the highest yielding bonds out there. But at the same time, you know, we don't really want 2029, 2030, and 2031 maturity years to all be oil and gas companies. Maybe one of them is okay, but we would like, let's throw a bank in there, let's throw utility in there, let's throw agriculture. We want some industry diversification to plug that hole. And you know, maybe it's good for us too. That human,
I think it really speaks to the fact that each client's portfolio is unique to their own.
Right.
And we only buy investment grade bonds, and we're looking at it that as the safety portion of an individual's portfolio. And you actually own the bonds, which I think is really important. So many people end up with a portfolio of all mutual funds. And we do have mutual funds, we have individual stocks, we have individual bonds that our clients own. And it really helps us. We can, by the quality and what we buy, control, you know, the taxes, the inflation, and the risk within a portfolio. And I always tell my clients, we can control all those things by what we buy, what we own, but we can't control their health. So I'm making a plug here for the end of the year that everybody really does have to take heed of their own health, because all the money and all the work that you can do, we build these beautiful portfolios. We want our clients to be around to really spend them and to enjoy them. We're going to take our last break, and let's talk about what people can look forward to in 2022. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. My guest today is Richard Schiller. He is a wealth advisor and portfolio manager for the Pavlik Investment Advisors. And Pavlik Investments, both Richard and Terry, manage all of the bond portfolios for us in our clients' portfolios. And it's a really important piece because it's the piece that brings the safety net to the portfolio, and where we literally do feel confident in saying to our clients, regardless of what happens in the market, if it goes up or it goes down, your lifestyle will not have to change because we have protected you for at least minimum of 7 years of income that you need to take from your portfolio. There's always those circumstances that happen that are unexpected. And that's why we also hold a portion of the bonds in mutual funds, so that if there is an emergency or something and we don't want to cash in a bond because we want to hold it to maturity, we have that cash flow that's available for us, the ease of the cash flow. But you know, Richard, this has been a crazy year and everybody's worried about the interest rates. People are saying, should I not invest my money? They've maybe sold their house, or they retired, have a retirement account, or they've inherited some money. And is it a good time to get in the market? Should we wait? You know, all of those questions. And of course, we're always looking at making sure that we're well diversified so that our clients' portfolios are acting and reacting to the market, regardless of what's happening in the market. You know, as you said, the diversification of oil and gas or food industries or any of the other things out there, retail, they're all going up and down all the time. But what do you anticipate, or what are you thinking about that we should be thinking about for 2022?
Yeah, certainly, Karen. So I think as we enter into 2022, there's a really big, important guy in the room, Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve. And he has a daunting task set ahead of him. So ever since COVID's start, really, he is controlling monetary policy at the Federal Reserve, and he has made liquidity ample. There is a ton of cash to go around in the system. Interest rates, that's the shortest end of the yield curve, were dropped immediately to zero, and they stay at zero. And on top of that, they are buying $120 billion per month of bonds out in the open market. So essentially, we're kind of competing against them to buy these bonds. So what does that do? That just pushes prices high, bond prices and bond yields low. So the latest that's come out is they plan to pare back that bond purchasing program. So 120 a month, they're going to decrease that by 15 billion per month from here. And if you do some quick math, that puts you at about the summer of 2022 when the bond purchase program will be done. And once that is over, then the topic quickly changes to how soon can they raise the federal funds rate? That's the shortest end of the yield curve that's currently at zero. And they'll raise it in 25 basis point increments likely. So that whole process is going to be happening in 2022. And that's a lot of Fed action that's going to take place. And that's going to take a tremendous amount of appropriate messaging. And it's a very, very difficult job to do, because Jerome Powell can't just come out and change something or say, oh, today, you know, we're going to raise the federal funds rate. It has to be very slowly, methodically messaged in really just words that, you know, we have more members that are thinking we're a little bit too aggressive. We need to take our foot off the gas a little bit. Said more eloquently than that. But you get the point. It needs to be messaged to the market softly. So really not to disrupt where rates are and not to disrupt also the stock portions of the portfolio as well. And I think that's going to be a really fine line to thread. That's a tough task ahead of them. I think there will be hiccups along the way. And I think that will cause more market volatility in the next year. And when I say market volatility, I think to myself, from a perspective more of seeing stocks swing 5-10%, maybe a little bit more than that. I don't think we have a pending recession on the near-term horizon, barring any exogenous shock like what we had with COVID. Let's say if this variant becomes very deadly, then I think we would be in some trouble. But you know, knock on wood, so far the data coming out is fairly good. But I think just the messaging from the Fed, taking their foot off the gas, communicating that to the market and just really raising that federal funds rate, that's going to put some 5, 10%, 15% volatility in stocks. And we should expect that. And when that comes, I think it's also important to know, like, we have a plan for that, right? So we have in your portfolios 10% on average maturing in 2022. So when that maturity comes, you know, let's look and let's say if stocks are down 10, 15%, maybe that's the right time we should, instead of taking that money in bonds and redeploy it back into stocks. I hope people aren't saying after stocks fall 20%, they're coming back to us with bonds, but it should always be the opposite way around. But I think there's going to be more volatility in stocks. I do think inflation will ease a bit from where it's at. I think some of the supply chain issues will work itself out. I have a hard time seeing energy is going to get that much more expensive without there being some big intervention, either the U.S. continuing to release our reserves or we drill more. Or other countries around the world start to drill more. It feels like we've taken a lot of the pain from that inflationary stance on energy already this year. And for interest rates, I don't think they're gonna, you know, skyrocket much past 2%. If I had a crystal ball, I think we continue to move higher. But really, before COVID hit, we were in this range between 2-3% from 2011 to pre-COVID, February 2020. So I think returning back to that range of 2-3% on the 10-year is probably a healthy place to be. And I think that's good for us, right? Because we're taking our maturities from this year, if they're staying in the bond portfolio, If that 10-year is at 2.5, I bet you I can get a 4% really high quality investment grade bond. And that's what gets me excited. That money's staying in the bond market, we can redeploy back out 10 years from now with a 4%. That's awesome.
When people are looking at their portfolios, and if they do have money to invest, of course, the market's been so high. Everyone's talking about inflation. The one thing that my opinion on it is, from being in the market for over 35 years, is that when people come to us and they start to panic, and it's always during a difficult market that we get so busy, everybody wants to come in because they don't know what they own. And in many cases, they actually own quality. They just don't know how it's going to react in the market. They don't know what to expect. And the one thing that Julie and I have always believed is important is to own quality. I know that people will say, well, you know, if you kind of buy the junk, you have the opportunity to make a lot of money. But if you buy the junk, you have a lot of opportunity to lose a lot of money. Right. And people will say, well, why shouldn't we buy, you know, that bond over there? It's paying 8% or 7%. And it's a risk. And the higher that return on your bond or the interest rate, the more the risk that's there. And the same is true of dividend paying stocks or any of the other investments. And of course, we want to have a certain amount of the portfolio invested in the market that's going to capture the highest return, but you have to balance it. And right. By owning quality, you really do take a lot of the risk off the table. And you may not make the highest of where the market's been, but we always look at our portfolios as being less than 50% down of what's down on the market by the way we invest. So I would recommend at this time of the year to my listeners that they really look at their portfolios, and you know, there should be, I always call it a recipe of how much do you want in bonds, how much do you want in stocks. We've had such a good year in small cap and large cap. It really makes sense to rebalance and right. to make sure that where you're at, and if some should go into bonds now, or, you know, or reallocate those funds, because it's been, you know, it's been a strong market for many people. And what happens to a lot of people is they get so out of whack that when the market goes down, they didn't realize how much they had in any one particular asset class.
You're exactly right. You know, and I hope when we get that volatility in next year, if it comes, I hope, you know, you guys are saying more, hey, that next maturity, set it off to the side. We're going to rebalance and redeploy yes. that into stocks. And that it's going to feel terrible. You're going to think we're crazy when we recommend that. But that's really how this is done. It's buy low, sell high. And that's a lot easier said than done when the market's low.
Well, people get married. They get married to, you know, different investments. So they'll say, well, I'm going to hold on to it. Maybe it'll come back. And then, of course, it's, you know, you can't lose money in the market unless you're forced to sell something or something blows up. Right. I mean, and so if you own quality, you can ride the market. And I always say the market's a little bit like a roller coaster. It goes up and it goes down. But who jumps off a roller coaster when it's moving? Nobody. Right.
Exactly.
So you got to stay. But the only way you can ride it out is if you own quality and you know what to expect when the market goes up and the when the market goes down. And I think that that's truly the key. And if you don't know what you own, and if you want to take a look at where you're at, please give us a call at 262-691-3200. And one of the things that's great about Pavlik is we can turn over your entire bond portfolio to them. They'll evaluate it for us. They make recommendations as to what to keep, what not to keep. And sometimes these bonds explode and it's too late. So, you know, don't be too late. Be proactive. Look at your portfolio. I think it's going to be a great 2022. And I so appreciate that you're willing to come on the air and take your time to talk to our listeners. I mean, I can't believe it, but I've been doing this show over 30 years and we've never sold a product on the air. It's always been education. It continues to be education because educated clients are really, really the best clients. So thank you, Richard. And again, my guest today is Richard Schiller. He is a wealth advisor and portfolio manager for Pavlik Investment Advisors, and they do all of our bond portfolios, and we are extremely happy and very excited. So thank you, and I hope that you have a great holiday.